Isaac Stern, Itzhak Perlman, Zubin Mehta, and Ernest Hemingway. Interesting combination of folks, but we can call your attention to an interview from 1958 that Hemingway gave to one George Plimpton and was published in the Paris Review. Quote, "Who would you say are your literary forebears, those who you have learned the most from, and along with many, many authors, including Mark Twain, Chekhov, Flaubert, and many others, including the good Kipling?" Then also, Hemingway tossed out the names of Bach and Mozart. And he says, quote, "I should think what one learns from composers and from the study of harmony and counterpoint would be obvious." So it is with Bach that we open this 11 o'clock hour, and it is to the subject of Hemingway that we turn here on Mosaic for this Thursday morning. I'm David Nicholas, and I welcome in three Hemingwayites. Would that be, can we, we've just coined a term, whether it's valid or not, we are live, and so we will go with that. Frank Bowles, who is the director of the Clark Historical Library, and joining him, Janet Danik, and also Mike Fetterspiel. And we're going to be talking about this opening to the Hemingway exhibit that is coming up this evening at the Clark Historical Library. Admission free and open to the public. And let's talk first about the exhibit and how it came together, and specifically how one's connection to this would come. Who wants to talk about the opening or the pulling together? Is that a Mike Fetterspiel question? That's a Frank Bowles question.
That's a Frank Bowles question.
All right. Okay.
What we try to do with this exhibit, we've been pursuing documenting Hemingway in Michigan for 15 years, more or less. This exhibit really is a culmination exhibit. And what it talks about as much as not only what we've accomplished, which is a great deal, but how it got accomplished as a model of how special collections libraries grow and benefit the community.
How did this one, or how does this one, get set aside? You called it a culmination, but what then at this point, and why at this point do we arrive at a culmination in the putting together of this particular exhibit?
It was a nice moment to stop because we had just acquired a few months ago a first edition of Hemingway's first published volume, Three Stories and Ten Poems, which was published in Paris in a very small run, 300 copies. The lead story in that volume is Up in Michigan. I mean, it tells you what Ernest Hemingway was thinking about in the early 1920s, what he thought he knew best, and what he thought he should write about. And that's a very nice sort of point to stop at and say, well, let's talk about Up in Michigan. How did we build a collection about Up in Michigan? What's in that collection?
The putting together, then, I think is a Janet Danik question, correct? And for those that are not familiar with perhaps the name and your position with the university, what is it that you normally do on top of then taking on this big project that opens and reaches this culmination point tonight?
I am the coordinator of exhibits for the Park Library, which includes the Clark, and I am in charge of all art exhibits throughout the facility, as well as stewardship of CMU's art collection within the library, as well as designing the historical exhibits for the Clark. So this is about my 20th exhibit that I have designed for the Clark over the years. And this came about because, as Frank said, the collection has grown, and we felt it was time. And past exhibits that the Clark has developed on Hemingway have been about the Hemingway connection to Michigan primarily. And the collection has grown to include objects, artifacts, and resources that go beyond Michigan, tell Hemingway's story internationally. And so this particular exhibit is going to focus on the gems of our collection as well as Hemingway in the broader sense.
How long did it take to come up with conceptual idea to pulling everything together, making the selections of what would be going on into the installation of the exhibit, reaching the point where it opens tonight?
Well, it's about a 5 or 6 month period. The Clark, we design and fabricate two exhibits per year. So as soon as this one opens, we'll start developing the next. And this was really an enjoyable process because Mike Federspiel is our in-house Hemingway scholar, and he was so very instrumental in being able to answer our questions quickly and really having the primary hand in developing the content of this.
First question then for you, Mike, is for those that have had, as Janet noted, and Frank too, the focus on the Hemingway connection to Michigan. Are there things in this exhibit that will bring to light anything that people may have not heard to date for those that are at least in some way familiar of Hemingway's time here? Is there something new that will shed a light on them or something that might capture the attention of someone discovering that connection for the first time?
I'm not sure exactly what they'll learn, but I do know what they'll see. And they'll see resources that the Clark has acquired that haven't been put on display before. And Janet mentioned gems, and there will be gems that come not only from Ernest Hemingway himself, original correspondence of his, but also, interestingly, materials that were affiliated with his sisters, family photo albums that the sisters had that show cottage life in northern Michigan at the turn of the century. You know, Ernest Hemingway, before he became the Nobel laureate, but he was Ernie. He was a brother, and he picked on his sisters, and he was out fishing when he should have been home doing chores. But show a northern Michigan summer life that a lot of your listeners know themselves, because that's the life they live in the summers. But to see these things all out and on display at one time will give you a better and bigger glance of the Michigan life that he had. And, as Janet mentioned, also a glimpse at other things that you might not think of, such as movie material. His name affixed to movies based on his works brought in actors, brought in box office, and there is a very dramatic and powerful display of posters and lobby cards and other ephemera associated with his movies. And I think that's kind of showy and kind of fun to see exactly how we marketed things before we had Instagram and Twitter and YouTube. And so I think there's a lot to see, and I think Janet did a great job of forcing us to pick the best of the best to bring out and show.
Moving beyond the connection to Michigan, the national and certainly international figure that he became, for those that aren't as familiar with the timeline, did the time in Michigan, do you think, lend a certain influence and color to the time that came later? I mean, it seems a trivial question because when we're young, that always influences what happens. But what maybe distinctly about Hemingway and Michigan do you see when you look at the Hemingway that became the world figure?
It's a good question. I think a lot of people associate Hemingway with exotic places, and Key West and Cuba and Spain and France, Paris. You know, they see somebody who celebrated those places and then would eventually write about them. They might not automatically think of northern Michigan as an exotic place, but to a young schoolboy, it absolutely was. And Hemingway spent those summers, his first 20 summers really, in northern Michigan, not as a celebrity, but as a young man with a lot of time in his hands. He saw things, he did things, he remembered things, a photographic memory, if you will. And when he decided to write full-time after his marriage in 1921 here in Michigan, and he was in Paris, he tacked a map of Michigan on the wall and wrote stories about glamorous places like Kalkaska and Mansalona and Boyne City and Charlevoix and Petoskey. I think he honed his craft writing those Michigan stories, often featuring a Hemingway-esque character named Nick Adams. So I think he discovered his writing persona based on those Michigan experiences.
When you're putting together an exhibit, Janet, I wonder, there are the pieces that are chosen, and it goes through, I'm sure, a sort of, we have all of this, we're going to use, okay, this, maybe we won't use this, oh, we need to bring in this. When those final decisions are made, the actual staging, the placement, the installation, and I know this is going to be part of the talk this evening, is that process of how it comes together. What do you look at when you walk in and you know you have all of these things and you see the space, a space you're familiar with, but then begin that process of what should go where and why, thinking and then putting yourself in the footsteps of someone that will be walking through that space?
Well, I do speak about that tonight at our presentation, and it was a painful experience for Mike when I asked him to go and choose seven gems from this collection that we could focus this exhibit on. So he quickly returned with two pages of items, and then he went back and finally chose the seven. But it's really very, very important in an exhibit to distill the content and present just the essence, because when we present too much, we know we lose our visitors 100%. So for this particular exhibit, we went beyond what we normally do at the Clark, and because we chose seven gems, we designed and had fabricated seven new artifact cases, which will feature those gems specifically apart from the rest of the collection. There are myriad other objects that are exhibited in this show, but the seven primary objects are highlighted dramatically when you walk in. You can't miss them.
The idea of an exhibit is always to draw people in, but there is also the aspect of an outreach element, and to highlight the Clark and its work and all of the pieces connected to Hemingway that have been collected over the years. How do you see this as an exhibit, not only to bring people in, but then something that can be used as that further outreach to, I would assume, look to maybe use this because of the significance of the figure to really, for those that don't know, to put Clark further on the map, to bring some more attention to CMU? What is that thought process and how this will all work?
Well, actually, our presentation this evening discusses how past exhibits and publications and events have been used to promote the collection, as well as give people an opportunity to help perpetuate the collection. And we expect the same thing to happen with the catalog that we've created for this exhibit, as well as the cases that we have created can move around the building and touch a larger audience than we will have just in this space. It's every exhibit that we create with the idea that it might have a larger audience. We have placed past exhibits in the Little Traverse History Museum in Petoskey, the Hemingway Stomping Grounds. We have placed them in Harbor Springs Museum. So there's always the opportunity for reaching larger audiences in many different ways.
One of the things that we've done and will be on display in the area where the reception will be held tonight is a traveling exhibit, which has existed since 2007, which does just what you suggest, David. It's been displayed at 35 venues around the state since then, and it continues to go out regularly. So we continue to promote Hemingway's importance and legacy in the state through tools like that traveling show.
Are there connections with exhibits, venues, scholars, and so forth that go beyond that Michigan border because of him as an international figure, but with certainly a focus, not exclusively to, but a focus on the Michigan connection? What collaborations have, or would you hope from this particular exhibit, might come to even potentially go beyond the borders of our state?
Well, we collaborate all the time, and the most current collaboration, which is one which would be dear and near to your listeners, is a gentleman named Ken Burns, who happens to be working on a documentary about Ernest Hemingway. His co-producer has been in the state. Mike gave her a guided tour of sites that might be useful for the filming, introduced her to the Clark Collection, and we've been working with Burns' production company to supply him with material about the young Ernest Hemingway. So that's just a typical example of how we collaborate with people beyond the state's borders.
And I would say Frank is modest a little bit about the collection. Really, the Clark's collection is the premier collection in the world for anybody interested in Hemingway's Northern Michigan connections, because it not only has a host of actual Hemingway materials, but it also has such a deep archive of materials about Northern Michigan. In 2012, the International Hemingway Society held their conference in Petoskey in Northern Michigan, brought in over 300 scholars. The Clark was featured prominently at that, and it's widely held. The reason Ken Burns turned to the Clark is they knew that the Clark was on the map as being that place, that steward of those Michigan memories.
So what does that do then to elevate the position of the university, if we look at the libraries in general or more focused and then specifically the Clark? What sort of reception or prestige does that put any of you in when you're talking with other people or beginning the collaboration? How have things like this taken the name and the brand of Central Michigan University out to, obviously an example of Ken Burns, but other ways in which we are now known beyond the immediate CMU family and Michigan as a whole?
Well, when you're collection building or when you're promoting the CMU brand, you can say things like, well, of course we have a very competent and well-equipped and well a library which can give you all the information you're going to need, but we also have some really interesting, unique material. And that gives us two advantages, I think. One, it does attract researchers from an international basis, as Mike has said, to come and look at it. Equally important, because we try to view the library as a cultural center, and Janet, as she said, spends some of her time in the Clark, but a lot of it also bringing in traveling exhibits, orchestrating speakers. We try to offer students that transformative moment, that moment when they come and they see something and they say, you know, the OMG moment. I see the world in a new way. I see it because I saw a Hemingway manuscript. I see it because I listened to a speaker that was brought in by the libraries. I see it because there's a piece of art on the wall that literally changed my life. We've had comments like that from students, and I think in many ways that's the most important thing we do for the brand. We say, we can change your life.
As the exhibit opens tonight, and all three of you have noted the presentation to focus really on kind of taking a different look in terms of the process of pulling it all together, what would be some of the highlights on down the road as this exhibit then lives and breathes in the space of the Clark for its time, other special events that people might want to have brought to attention so that they are beginning to look ahead for some specific things and highlights?
It's a good question. Some of that will happen only once people have seen it and become aware of it. We anticipate a number of visitors to see it. We hope to generate more interest in the Michigan Hemingway Society that hosts an annual gathering in the fall, has a great website if people are interested in more information about Hemingway's Michigan connections. But I think one of the things we're interested in is not an event. Almost all of the Clark's collection of Hemingway materials were donated. You know, the Clark depends on the goodwill and the trust of donors. We've had original Hemingway letters donated to the Clark because they knew the Clark was a good professional steward of materials. Also, the materials that were purchased by the Clark were purchased with donated monies. And so getting the word out about the collection, its depth, its breadth, its professional presentation, we think will hopefully bring more money, more notoriety, more publicity to CMU and the Clark, enabling that collection to continue to grow. And Frank said it is a culmination. It is, but it's a moment in time culmination because it will continue to grow and continue to evolve over time.
For that presentation taking place today as the exhibit opens at the Clark Library, it is free and open to the public. The time then and that people can attend, doors opening when to presentation beginning when?
The doors are always open, but the auditorium where the presentation will happen, it opens at 6:30 and the event begins at 7 and there is a reception in the exhibit after we're done.
And that's the library auditorium.
That's right. Sorry.
On the campus of CMU. Clark, C-L-A-R-K-E, clark.cmich.edu for all of the information that will bring your attention to the opening of this exhibit of the Hemingway Collection. 7 o'clock for the presentation tonight. Again, free and open to the public there. And then taking good care of all of this Hemingway stuff moving forward. Frank Bowles, Janet Denick, and Mike Federspiel. Thank you so much, all of you, for coming in to spend some time with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.